We're here at the 2013 Farm Progress Show, and with me is Bob Dineen, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. He came in to chat about some of the issues going on in the ethanol world, and one of those is defending the RFS. And RFA just sent a letter to EPA, just like today or yesterday, right, regarding the waiver that Big Oil has requested from EPA. Tell us about that, Bob.
Well, the American Petroleum Institute had filed a so-called waiver with EPA a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, we just felt that EPA could probably benefit from our comments on that as well. And so we did send them a rather lengthy letter today that the notes, for example, that, oh, API really doesn't have standing to even file a waiver because under the Act, they're not an obligated party. And so that was point number one, but that's almost insignificant. What we then went on to do is to tear apart the legal and technical case that they tried to make for EPA granting a waiver, because there's just no reason. API would like to completely rewrite the Clean Air Act, but, you know, EPA has a copy of it, so they know what it says, and if they forget, we're there to remind them. This notion that API is trying to create, that the RFS has to be limited to 10% because the market just can't support a drop more than 10% ethanol, is not what the Act was intended to do, is not supported by the marketplace, and has no legal basis whatsoever. And that was fundamentally what we were going after, is tearing down their narrative that is suggesting that somehow we've got to be limited to 10%. No. When the Congress passed a 36-billion-gallon requirement in 2007, they knew that you couldn't blend that much renewable fuel into 130, 140, 180, a 200-billion-gallon gasoline market. So, no, maybe they didn't anticipate that consumption would drop. Maybe they thought that consumption would continue to increase, but not to more than 360 billion gallons of fuel. So, you know, I think what we've done is send a good shot over the bow. I want everybody to understand, not just EPA and our friends in Congress, but I want API to understand we're not going to go away. And we're not going to just leave the playing field and let them, you know, create their own narrative. The narrative was written and passed and signed into law in 2007, and you have to start abiding by it, period.
Well, and this is just the latest salvo from Big Oil to try and deconstruct the RFS, right?
Oh, absolutely. And they're looking at every form. I mean, they've got more money than God, and they are spending it. They're spending it to protect their market share, their barrel. They've already lost 10% of the barrel, and they are fit to be tied about losing any more. And so they spin all kinds of nonsense. One of my favorite arguments from them these days is, oh, well, the RFS is now just an anachronism because it was passed at a time when we were in search of oil and domestic production was declining. Well, now domestic production is increasing and we're awash in oil. Well, okay, it is true that we have found some oil and we are fracking to get it at a great environmental cost in North Dakota, and that's good. We need it all. But it's still $110 a barrel, and we are living in a marketplace that any time there's a hiccup in the Middle East, prices increase, and what we're seeing today in Syria is more than a hiccup, so we're careening towards $120, $130, maybe passing the $140 mark again. And so, in my view, the only defense that we have from the skyrocketing prices and the volatility of oil, as long as we continue to be dependent on Middle Eastern oil for the world's supply, is ethanol. That's all we have. And we better darn well be sure we are maximizing, not minimizing, ethanol production and use in this country.
Well, another thing that why the RFS continues to be targeted and attacked is the fact that we still don't have significant production of cellulosic ethanol, which is part of the requirements under the RFS. What do you say to that?
Well, that is also part of the oil company's narrative, right, that cellulose is a phantom fuel and it's not being produced. And, you know, they can easier go out and get pixie dust than they can a gallon of cellulose. And boy, that'd be scary if it was true. The problem is they should go to Florida, because in Florida, INEOS today is producing cellulosic ethanol. They should perhaps go to Galva, Iowa, where 3 weeks ago, Quad County Corn Processors broke ground on a cellulose to ethanol facility, where they're going to be taking the cellulose that's in corn fiber and processing it. And once that is commercialized in 6 months, lots of other companies are going to start doing the same thing. They go to Kansas and see Abengoa. They can go to Iowa and see Project Liberty from Poet. The fact of the matter is cellulosic ethanol is, in fact, here today. And no amount of whining from the API and saying it doesn't exist can belie the fact that it does exist today and commercialization is happening.
Now, just not very long ago, a few weeks ago, we had, just before Congress went out of session, you had a hearing on the RFS before one of the House Energy Subcommittees. I thought it was pretty well balanced, considering, you know, some of these hearings have been, but it got pretty dicey in a few times. Your comments on that hearing, and you were surrounded by big oil there.
Well, and I enjoy it. See, here's the thing. You know, the ethanol industry is represented by a dumb Irishman. And I love a fight. And if I wasn't in a fight, I'd have to go looking for one. So the fact that it comes to me every morning when I get out of bed is just a fine thing with me, particularly at my age. But this was a classic example. I've got the American Petroleum Institute representing Big Oil to my right. I've got the American Fuels and Petroleum Association representing Little Oil to my left. And so I'm surrounded by Big Oil and Little Oil. And quite frankly, I don't think they got the better of me because I was having too much fun. And, you know, they would try to, you know, just spew this nonsense about how ethanol and the RFS and RINs are driving up the price of gasoline today. And you should have seen the look on members' faces when I had to tell them that, no, I'm sorry, RINs are free. You know, if they want more RINs, come get some more ethanol. We'll give you some more free RINs. What they're talking about is the trading that goes on amongst refiners for those RINs. Those companies that didn't purchase enough ethanol to meet their obligation have to go to companies that purchase more than their obligation in order to comply with the act. Well, that was like fingernails on the chalkboard to those folks. And that's what the facts do. It just drives them to distraction. But the fact of the matter is, when I was able to tell them, sure, Valero might have had a problem with getting enough RINs. At dumbfounds me, as Valero itself is the third largest RIN producer in the world. But if they've got a problem, then I'll answer that with BP that says, this isn't an issue. I'll answer that with Hess that says, we've made money. I'll tell them to look at Marathon that is profiting from this program today. So are there winners and losers among refiners on the RIN program? Sure. But, you know, that's amongst them. That doesn't get to the consumer level, because if Marathon is making money on RINs, presumably the consumer purchasing Marathon's fuel is benefiting. And if Valero is losing money on RINs, you know, shame on them if they try to pass that on to the consumer. What they ought to do is plan a little bit better. What they ought to do is call up one of the ethanol plants that they own and say, hey, we need more ethanol. Can you get us some? I'm guessing, you know, Valero's ethanol plants will provide the mothership with more ethanol.
Well, now, on that committee is Congressman John Shimkus, who is from Illinois. He was here yesterday at the Farm Progress Show. I spoke to him about this, and although he was really reluctant to actually come out and say it, he's definitely looking at the legislative fix for the RFS. He thinks that we're going to have to do that, and it's because of RINs, and it's because, he says, but I have both. In my district, I have corn growers, and I have, a couple of oil refiners in my district, too. But he says he's leaning towards a legislative fix. What do you think about that?
I sympathize with him. Look, Congressman Shimkus is a great friend of this industry. He understands agriculture. He understands value-added agriculture, and he most certainly understands the importance of ethanol in growing rural economies. You know, so he is going to do everything he possibly can to make sure that the ethanol industry is held whole. Okay, great. But he's a legislator. And so when somebody brings a problem to him, he thinks, how can I legislate a fix out of this? And we look at it a little bit differently, because we think in 2007 and in 2005, they legislated just fine. and that there's nothing wrong with the RFS today that can't be fixed with what is right with the RFS. And the worst thing in the world that you could do right now is to legislate. Why? Because it builds uncertainty into the marketplace. And so if you are an investor and you're wondering, where do I put my dollars today? And there's all this uncertainty created about the policy in Washington, D.C. with respect to biofuels, you're going to be even more inclined to invest in that fracking operation than that biofuels plant. And I think that would be a mistake. Everybody has understood since 2007 what the rules are. Everybody has understood since at least 2009 when EPA told them that you're going to have to be blending more than 10% ethanol in 2013. So if the refiners did not do what they were supposed to do, if they didn't invest in E85 infrastructure, if they're not allowing their marketers to offer E15, then I'm sorry. It's on you. But for the Congress to reward that bad behavior by giving them relief would set the effort to expand and continue the evolution of this industry back. And I'm not going to sit by and let that happen.
Well, and EPA just came out with their new targets under the RFS, and that's where you think this can be handled, right, on the administrative level.
Absolutely. The Act provided the agency plenty of flexibility to address situations, and they have exercised that flexibility. The refiners whine about this burden of having to find cellulosic ethanol. I'm sorry, EPA has waived more than 99% of the cellulosic ethanol requirement in recognition of the fact that gallons did not come along as fast as they wanted. So, you know, spare me the crocodile tears about cellulose, okay? You know, move on. EPA has indicated that, you know, they're going to look at advanced biofuels, cellulose more. They'll adjust the numbers to reflect the reality in the marketplace. But that reality does not and cannot include holding the RFS to just 10%. The whole point of the RFS was to move beyond 10%, was to allow ethanol and other biofuels to be more than just a blend component in gasoline. And just because the stockholders of ExxonMobil have decided that they don't want to blend any more than 10% ethanol, I'm sorry, the stockholders of the United States and the stockholders of consumers across this country want choice. They need options at the pump. They want relief at the pump. We got to bring prices down. We need diversity. We need biofuels, period.
Do you think we have a champion for the RFS and our new administrator for EPA?
I do. Gina McCarthy gets it. She has been reaching out to the ag community. You know, she's talked to us. She's going to be very open. She was assistant administrator for AIR, so she had responsibility for this program. She knows what the issues are. Most importantly, she's a Bostonian, right? And as such, those big oil guys from Texas don't necessarily speak her language. And she's not going to be, you know, bowled over when, you know, a bunch of guys speaking big oil Texan come in and say, "We, you know, save us from ourselves." She's a tough lady, and I think she's going to do great.
Thank you very much, Bob Dineen, here at the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.